Alcoholic. My name's Matt.
Amen.
I haven't did this in a long time, so should be. We'll see what comes out. I guess I talked about it with God and my sponsor. So I really need to thank my home group most of all. I mean, being young in this program, I can lose focus real quick, and I guess this home group keeps me grounded. So I definitely need to thank the ones that's beside me every Sunday that hold me accountable. So if you this is my home group, and if you don't have a home group, shame on you. I don't know. I don't know what else to tell you. You know, having a home group saved my life, really. And my sobriety date is October 28th, 2005. And I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a drug, you know, since then, and got sober at 25, and hopefully, I can hold on to that sobriety date. And, I guess I'm supposed to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. None of these things really make me an alcoholic. I don't know if I was born an alcoholic or, you know, if it's hereditary or whatever. I don't get into all that, but I know that I'm an alcoholic today, and that's important to me, that I never forget that. So, my mother and father was divorced when I was two, and so it kind of made it a little bit difficult growing up with Mom. Never really had a father figure, so I guess she did the best she could, you know, and I was brought up in a trailer park, so I guess, you know, I kind of always felt a little bit less than, you know, always being picked up at the trailer park, you know, on the school bus, and never did seem right, but, you know, like I said, she always provided for me. And my father, he would get me on weekends, I guess, you know, when he found time, you know, and this disease did take my dad away. He died 53 years old. And, my grandfather as well. He passed away 53 due to this disease of alcoholism. So, I guess he would, you know, pick me up sometimes on the weekends and sometimes he wouldn't. You know, I was just brought up around drinking. I'll just say that. He had 9 brothers, 1 sister, and it was always just, it was always a party going on, and that's what I knew. So, and he liked to do those outside issues as well. You know, I was brought up around the marijuana, and I smelt that at early ages, and we used to play this little game. You know, and I was probably, I don't really know what my first drink was, but I do remember he would send me to the refrigerator, and, you know, I would get to go get his Budweiser. He always drank Budweiser in the can. And so he'd bring it back, and he'd open it up, and he would pop the top on it, and I'd always get the first sip. You know, I'd get that little foam, that little taste, and I can always just remember that little, you know, sensation that it gave me. And, you know, that went on for a little while. I don't really know if, like I said, I don't think that made me an alcoholic, but I do know that it was there. Just growing up, I just had that feeling of, you know, not fitting in, and I always wanted something just to take me out of Matt. I wanted to go to a different place, you know, and just wanted to be somebody else a lot of times, I guess, be a simple way to put it. So, growing up around parties, my dad, you know, he would always throw these parties, and my grandmother, it's just what they did, you know, and I fell right in there. Kegs all the time, you know, I'd sneak up to the keg and take the tap and put it in my mouth, you know, sneak a little sip here and there, and, you know, just 13, 12, you know, somewhere in there, and sneak some liquor along the way. It was just, you know, it was just there. part of the lifestyle of the Corbins. That's just what we did, you know. So, I guess moving on, I really never was a much of a drinker, you know, in high school. I hadn't really found it. Drank a little bit in, you know, prom night and stuff. I have four children, and I think probably one of those children were conceived at prom night. You know, I was that young, having a kid at 17, so fresh out of high school. I had my first child, and you know, my disease just picked up. I guess, you know, I wasn't really an everyday drinker, but every time I got the opportunity to drink, I found it, you know, and I took advantage of it. So, you know, coming along, I just, you know, found my way with alcohol. It just, like I said, it gave me that sensation, you know, that I so much was looking for. I guess graduating high school, I, you know, went to work with her father. They owned a local tractor business in Culpeper. And, you know, I just, some nights I was offered to stay with them at their house, but, you know, that was, they would catch on to my game. I wouldn't be able to come home drinking, you know, with her mom and dad there. So I found my way and got my own place, you know, and I was able to do what I wanted to do while she was raising this first child of ours, you know, that I wasn't present for. And, you know, we would still see one another on and off, and I would show up to work, you know, late most of the time. And, you know, her father would have some talks with me on occasion. But, you know, alcohol really never was an issue. Nobody ever brought it up. And it just, it never really seemed to matter. So she wound up getting pregnant again with our second child. She's now 12 today. So, you know, and I really wasn't much of a father figure to her either growing up, you know. Just was incapable for showing up for life a lot of times. It's just where my disease had taken me. I didn't really know what to do, you know. I wanted to hang out with those that drank like I did. By then I was starting to get into my early 20s, you know, and I wanted to run with those that like to run like I did. So, you know, I found some guys that like to participate with those outside issues that we talk about in here sometimes. And, you know, I found something else that enhanced my drinking. I guess it allowed me to drink that much more and kept me going, you know, that much longer, I guess. So, I was still had the same job, and I was staying out all night. It was really getting bad. I was coming in 9, 10 o'clock, whenever I wanted to. Other guys in the shop, you know, just kind of getting on me, and, you know, you hear that heat from people, and it just, you know, it kind of sinks in my mind. I'm really messing up here, you know, and this guy's trying to give me an opportunity, and I'm just, you know, not listening to him. So, anyways, you know, God always, it talks about in the big book a lot of times, turning points, you know. I like to call them God shots. And the God of my understanding today, he speaks to me with a very, I guess, subtle and slow, calm voice. You know, he's not a screaming God like the one that, you know, that I thought he was when I was growing up, you know. I went to church, and, you know, my mother, she made me go to church, but I wanted to or not. So I was brought up in the church. So I knew about God. And, you know, I never thought that he turned his back on me. I guess I really, I was the one that turned my back on him, is what it come down to. So, you know, I had started selling some stuff and just doing some things that, you know, it's really not appropriate at the podium, but, you know, I was just making other out incomes, I guess. You know, I had a little side business. I'll just call it that, just to keep it simple. So I still had this job, and you know, I had my little side business going on at night. And one day, I had to go to Fredericksburg to deliver some tractor parts. Fredericksburg. This was in 2001. This was February 16th, 2001. I was traveling to Fredericksburg, and they had just started this Route 3 where they started making it four lanes. And I guess this guy was, you know, he was delirious or something. To my understanding, he just came from the hospital. And he was on some meds or whatever, but anyways, I was driving a company truck, and this car just came out of nowhere. It just pulled across the first two lanes, and it came into my lane, and I hit it head on. And there was a lady in there, and she was in the passenger side, and she didn't make it. She passed away, and all I could ever remember was me holding on to that steering wheel. It was a 1978 four-ton truck, and it was just all metal. And I wasn't wearing a seat belt, but I could just see this lady just screaming, you know, for her life. And she was, like, trying to get away from the door. And, you know, so I just, that was a turning point that I just kind of turned my back on God. I couldn't really understand why he had me to, you know, use me as an instrument, I guess, to take this woman, you know, off this earth. And it really tore me up for a long time, because it was a guy I went to Piedmont with. I went to school to learn how to weld. And, you know, I never really did much drinking back then. I was always just smoking cigarettes. But this guy I'd gotten pretty close with, and, you know, it really tore me up. It was his mother. And, you know, that night at the hospital, and that just really gave me an opportunity to get some pharmaceuticals. That's when I really got turned on to those, and took a liking to pharmaceuticals. So, you know, he was upset. He had found out that it was me, and you know, we had some controversies beforehand, before this happened, had some incidents with he and his wife and I at a bar one night, you know. And so he was out in the waiting room at the emergency room waiting for me. It was just a big controversy. So I remember they took me out the back of the emergency room and took me home, and that's when my mom and my grandmother sat me down and told me, you know, who it was and what had happened. And you know, from that point on, I was on a mission, I guess, to put it simple, you know. I always enjoyed drinking in bars. That was just my scene. I love those dark, dingy holes, you know, that smell, that funk. I really could do that. That was just, you know, my kind of drinking went on in bars. So, you know, like I said, I was introduced to pharmaceuticals then, and, you know, that was February, so I just, you know, I had all this depression, and I just laid around, and then I started abusing them, you know, taking more, working my doctor, you know, going back. I had numerous arthroscopic knee surgeries, probably two of them I didn't even need, really. I just wanted to go back and get the morphine ball, you know, and the meds. So I just laid around, and you know, that was a year of that they ran those planes into those buildings. So I laid around in my bed, recovering, just watching that on TV all the time, just getting more and more depressed, you know, and trying, you know, just to blame somebody, and ultimately blaming God, really, just wondering why I'm laying here, why I'm in this situation, why he's running these planes in these buildings, killing all these people, and just always wanting to blame somebody rather than take responsibility and look at myself. That's what it came down to. So I wind up getting better, you know, and but the meds, they just kept coming. I just I didn't really know how to get away from those. They had taken over my life, really, pretty much. So I was still hanging around with, got back with those guys I like to run with, and you know, just it kept progressing along. It kept progressing along and along, and my disease was getting worse. I was starting to use other substances that would allow me to drink more, and it just kept the party going. So I don't know, I was riding around one night and with some of these guys, and we were having a good time just out riding the roads, and all of a sudden we passed a deputy, and he turned around, and I seen him turn around, and I tried to outrun him. I was driving one of my these partying buddies' friends. I thought they were friends, one of their vehicles. So I'm just trying to speed it up here. I don't want to be stuck on a drunk a log, because I mean, we all got drunk a logs, and I don't my life's too good today. Sobriety's been too good to me, and I'd rather talk about some of that. But so the deputy called up to me. I couldn't outrun him. He called up to me, and he pulled me over, and I had pulled us out the truck, and I had these meds on me, you know, and I had scratched my name off the bottle or something. I don't know why I did that, but they were still prescribed to me, and it was just chaos. And they ran dogs through the truck, and we had other substances on us, and the dog found that stuff. And so they had these pills, but they didn't know what they were, you know. I wouldn't tell them, of course, and my buddy wasn't going to tell them. So we went to the hospital, and we spent a half an hour out in the parking lot in handcuffs, and, you know, they wanted to call the doctors in there and have to evaluate all these pills to see what we was going to be charged with. So all that went on, and, you know, and I got busted with some other substances too. It didn't look very good in the newspaper, and my family wasn't very happy, that's for sure. Those kids were steady growing up without me, and my mother-in-law, father-in-law wasn't very happy either. So you know, I'd been staying there some on and off, and I spent 3 days in jail, and that was another turning point in my life. I knew that I did not want to spend my life in jail. It was just not something that was it was a dirty hole. It was another place that I just didn't want to be, have no parts of. So they removed me from their house, or asked me to leave and not to come back, you know, until I did something with myself and got myself some help. And so you know, I went along, and I did not see my kids for about 6 to 8 months. It was just a blur there in that year of 2004. I really don't remember a whole lot of that. You know, it was just a party to the, you know, to the end. So one night, I don't know really what happened. It was just, we were at this great big house party, and having a good time, you know. It was all kinds of stuff going around, and they had this Purple Passion stuff there where they would go get grain alcohol over in Maryland and mix up this big, I don't know, it was a cooler, I guess, a great big cooler, and put a bunch of fruit in there, pineapples and grapes, and, you know, we would drink that and eat the fruit, and it was just one of those nights, and I just, you know, blacked out. Really, I wasn't much of a, I didn't really black out a whole lot, you know, but I don't have a good memory, I'll put it to you like that, but wasn't really a blackout, but at least that's what we'll call it. So, something just snapped in me. I don't really know what happened, but God had just, you know, reached out to me, and I had, had enough, you know. I had accumulated some debt. I don't know. I had this big deal where I wasn't working, so I had excellent credit, and I would I'd go to the bank and get all these cash advances on my credit cards. You know, I'd get like $2,000 cash advance like a dummy, and with, you know, this big high interest rate, and just go spend it, party with it, and it kept on for like 8 months. And when it was all said and done, and I got to AA, I had like $76,000 in credit card debt. Yeah. I was out of control. So, but anyways, that night, I don't know, I went to my grandmother's, and I was just, you know, crying. I was scared I was going to run out of gas. I was driving a little Isuzu Rodeo that I was running on four cylinders, you know, and it just, I was scared to death. I wasn't even going to get to my grandma's. I was going to run out of gas. And I do remember that night clearly, you know. I remember going in there and just surrendering. I had been beaten into, you know, a state of reasonableness that talks about that I just wanted something different. And I didn't know how I was going to get it. I didn't know what was out there. But I knew I didn't want to continue living the life like I was living, you know. And I knew the guilt and remorse was catching up to me about with these kids that I had, and I wasn't participating in their life. And by then, our relationship, by then we had had another kid. So I was 23, you know, and I had another kid. So now I have three. Two girls and a boy, and I just wasn't being responsible at all. But anyways, I had to get some help. So, you know, they took me to a detox in Richmond, my grandmother and my aunt. And, you know, it's like some type of medicine that they have nowadays, naltrexone or naprexone or something, and, you know, I had to go get that implant because I was just so strung out on the drugs, you know, and it was a 4-day detox. They put me up in a hotel room, and they give me these antabutes, I guess, or whatever you call them, just to wean me off, you know, slowly bring me down so I didn't die. And on the fourth day, they took me back to this doctor, and they inject this thing in you where it kind of shuts off the neutron in your brain where you won't be immune, you know, to this stuff. It just kind of like helps you forget about it, I guess. But anyways, that helped for a little while, but it didn't quite fix the problem. So I went back at it, you know. I got hooked up with the same people again and went back at it for a few more months. And finally, I come back home crying again. That's what I would do. I would always go cry to my nanny, you know. And so they said they would get me some help. You know, I begged them to send me somewhere. I just have to get away from this town and have to get away from these people, you know. So that's when I was introduced. I went over to Edge Hill in Winchester. And, you know, it was the worst 36 days of my life. I I wound up staying six extra because I didn't feel comfortable coming back home. Just got introduced to this program, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, everything I have today, I owe it all to this program. There's no doubt about it. So I just remember the fear, you know, that I was just so full of and had no idea. That was why, you know, a lot of times why I would drink. I would just want to cover up that fear, and that was what I was masking. I just wanted to be somebody different, just scared of people, scared of everything, just scared of life, really. So I hung in there, and I completed my 30 days, 36 days, and went to meetings around the clock. You know, they it was meetings. Six times a day, you go to the meeting. At nighttime, you go to outside meeting. It was wintertime. It was February when I went there. About the same time that, I think it was pretty close. It was February 16th, 2005. Was when I went there. And so you had to walk to meetings. It was, you know, go or get out, one of the two. It was that kind of place. And it was structure and stability. That's what I had needed. I had none of that getting up and running, you know, all day long and partying. Just, it was not fun at the end. Let's just say that it got to be a full-time job, I reckon. You know, that just getting and using, and it just, it was a full-time job for me. It really was. So I come around the rooms. I hung out and, you know, got to know some people. Some of them I really didn't want to know, but some of them I took a liking to. And I stayed around here for about 6 months, you know, and just, it just really wasn't for me. You know, I just didn't think that I had a whole lot in common with these older folks, you know, and but come to find out, you know, I really did have a lot in common. I just wasn't willing. That was the whole thing I was lacking. Was the willingness to do something different, you know. I didn't try the steps. I had gotten a temporary sponsor. But, you know, if you get a sponsor and you don't use him, then what is it? You call him your sponsor, and that's what you call him. You don't use him. So after 6 months, I had, you know, I was ready to do a little bit more research. So that was I guess in July or something of that year, 2005. And so I just decided to go back out, and I stayed back out there for another 2 months, and it was still the same. Still the same people, still the same places, and nothing had changed. And so I found myself again in that same bar that I'd like to be in, you know, just that down in that dark hole, and just trying to feel the pain, you know, just trying to get rid of the pain and fill it up with something. So I came to another turning point, and you know, my family had called on to me, and they asked me, you know, again, if I wasn't, are you still going to those meetings, you know? And I kind of, you know, kind of lied to them and told them I was, but I really wasn't. So I was kind of coming in and out, I guess. I was kind of coming in and out, and I was on probation. So I had to take these chips that we get and show them to my probation officer. You know, every month he wanted to see my chip and wanted to put it on the copier and make a copy of it. You know, he had them all lined up, you know. So I was kind of trying to pull the wool over his eyes too. But, you know, after a while, I was going into AA meeting, you know, just picking up a chip And I wound up picking up a 6, 7, and 8 month while I was drinking, just, you know, kind of giving it a little test run, I guess I call it, just giving this program a little test drive. So I had to come clean with all of them, you know. It's about getting honest. This program is about, you know, telling the truth, and that's how it works. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And so, you know, I had told my family that I was drinking again, and, you know, they had seen a little bit of change in me, that AA was working. And so I had to come back, and I gave that meeting up in town on Sunday night, gave them back all their chips, and, you know, had to get honest with them and tell them what I had been doing. So that was October 28th, 2005, and, you know, I got a sponsor, and I sat down with him, and I listened to what he had to say, you know, and I wound up going through the steps. It's the most humbling experience that I had ever, you know, it was told to me, you know, the night. I have a life before my steps, and I have a life after the steps, you know, and that just, it makes so much sense to me, how they have changed my life and, you know, opened my eyes. And if you don't really hear anything tonight, and, you know, you don't understand my message, just know that Alcoholics Anonymous is real, and it, you know, it works. And I didn't think it, at 25 years old, it was what I wanted, but it's what God gave me. So, and, you know, I got in this guy's back pocket, and we went everywhere together. You know, he took me to meetings. We went to conferences. And, you know, it was what I needed. I needed to stay grounded. I start off strong. I really do. Everything I do, I start off ready to win the race, but I don't finish very well at all with anything. So hopefully this sobriety thing, this path that I'm on here, I can finish this one strong, you know, and maybe continue this journey. But he took me through the steps, you know, the first one about powerlessness. I had no idea that I was powerless over alcohol, how it had, you know, just got me in the grip. Just the rapture of this disease had taken over my life, and I had no idea what it was about. And I knew that once I put that first one in my body, that all bets was off, that I was not going to know where I was winding up that night. I didn't have no idea what party I was going to be at, or who I'd be with, or where I'd be. And so that helped me to understand what powerlessness really is. And I just I sat down and, you know, went through the steps with him, like it says to do in this book, and, you know, read it out, and life just gets better one day at a time. You know, it just seems to happen in ways that I really, some things I'm glad it happened, and other things I really just don't understand why it happens, but it's not for me to try to figure out. You know, it's in God's hands. So, you know, I've worked the third step with them. I, you know, made a decision, and that I was going to try to do God's will to the best of my ability. I wake up in the morning, I ask God to walk with me, give me the courage and strength that I need to allow Him to walk beside me, and it works. You know, some days I take it back, but other days I learn to give it to Him. So, and step four, you know, that's another humbling experience, sitting down and going through the steps, especially this one here, you know, doing this fourth step, trying to help me to understand myself, I guess. It's a good way to do some soul searching, I guess, is a real simple way for me to put it. Putting all that garbage on paper, black and white, where I know it's true and I can't lie about it. And going over it with another human being on the fifth step, you know, I thought I was unique. I thought that, you know, a lot of the stuff that I was the only one that I had did to these, you know, these women that I had run around with. And I soon found out that I was not that person, not that bad of a person at all. It was just the things I did when I was caught up in the grip of alcoholism, you know. And I was really not a bad person. And we, you know, keep on going down through the steps, asking God to remove them. You know, I do that. I try to do that as well. And I still have all my character defects that I came in here with. They're just not raging like they were. I guess I got a little bit more control over them today, I suppose. So, and taking that list from the fourth step and making amends to those people that I had harmed, making financial amends. I'd like to tell you that I was unable to pay back that $76,000, but I couldn't do it. So I wound up having to collect bankruptcy on that. But there was some debts that I owed people, like my family and my father. You know, I had had to make amends to him as well. You know, he was in Texas, and he traveled all over the country. He was big into this environmental thing where they'd set these windmills. He was a crane operator, and these big windmills that you see on TV, he was an operator, and he put those up, a lot of them. And so he had had a heart attack, his first one, and he was in Texas, and I had to fly out there. And so they gave me an opportunity to see him and hang out with him, you know, and you know, just gave me a chance to get comfortable with him again and get close to him. And I tried to make amends to him, and you know, he just wanted me to continue to be the man I was being, and taking care of my kids like I, you know, had been doing, like you people had showed me how to do, you know, really. So made amends to him, and you know, I had to make some financial amends to my grandmother for that treatment center that she sent me to. I wound up having to pay her back, which was, you know, okay, because I knew it was working. And so I guess 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. You know, I try to do those on a daily basis, and I try to continue just to show up, really. It just allows me to get closer with the God of my understanding. And to get closer to you people that I was so scared of at first. But like I said, now, you know, just being connected, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to do. Stay connected, having a home group and being present in my home group. And just, I don't know where to begin, you know, with what I've did in AA. I've been all over the place, you know, just been able to travel to Akron, Ohio a couple times. I've been to Founders Day. If you ever get the opportunity to do that, you need to do it. It's just an unbelievable experience when you go to Dr. Bob's house and you get on your knees and you say that third step prayer and that surrender room, they call it. It's just it makes grown men cry. I've seen it. And it's just a blessing, really, to be able to feel today and to have feelings and not be numb, you know, to be able to go through that type of stuff. And I went to San Antonio. Got to go out to the World Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, 70,000 sober drunks. That was another wonderful experience. looking forward to go to Atlanta in 2015. I can't wait to do that. Like I said, this program I owe my life to, and you know, anytime I get asked to do something in this program, I need to do it. Whether I want to or not. So, you know, I'm grateful again. I'll just, you know, thank my home group once again for just inviting me to do this, really. And I just, it's been a long time since I shared my story. It takes a lot of practice to do it, that's for sure. So, I'm grateful to be here tonight. And it's just good to be sober. And I thank each one of y'all that come support this home group too, or my home group, every Sunday. I see a lot of familiar faces here, and you know. Means a lot. I was riding on the way up here tonight, and just those mountains, you know, those mountains. Blue Ridge Speakers Group. Like I said, I start off strong, but I finish weak. So I don't know. I love each and every one of y'all, and I thank you so much. You know, I want to hold on to this program, and being in a home group just helps me stay grounded. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. I mean, every Sunday this holds me accountable. I mean, life is good, but at 34 years old, my disease, it tells me all kinds of stuff. You don't need those people. But I do need you. I need this program, and I need this home group. That's what it comes down to. So, I thank each and every one of you that keeps me where I need to be. And I think I'm going to close with that.